Am I right in saying that as residents group, you've monitored traffic for every day?
Every day.
And how often has the council been doing it?
I don't know. Their figures, I think, are over a one-week period. So we have 2 years' worth of data, and we can show you every data point. And we're monitoring sound 5 times a second, and we're monitoring every vehicle, so we can even tell you vehicle type if people wanted to look at that. And we're monitoring NO2 continuously, not because NO2 is the most significant pollutant, but because NO2 is just a marker for other types of pollutants. As a group of residents, we've come in and we have offered monitoring and evidence that suggests there's a problem. You know, we've measured noise, we've measured pollution, we've measured traffic. We're being told that that isn't of significant weight, even though it's over 2.5 years, to measurements of a week of traffic measurements or measurements of once a month using a passive diffusion tube. These are being given much, much greater weight in the decision-making process than the stuff that we're producing. Now, we're not saying that we are an environmental monitoring team. We're just saying that we are providing evidence that there is an issue that should be looked at more closely. And the answer here is a little bit split between, yes, we're going to put monitoring in, and yes, we're going to put it into the basements, or we're not sure we're going to put it in the basements, or it's difficult to put it in the basements. And so I didn't get a very clear feel about exactly what was coming out of this. And that, I think, is a pity, because we put a lot of effort in to putting that into a place where it can be looked at. And as you heard there in the discussion, Professor Laxon admitted that the advice has changed about the way you calculate correction factors, but that, in his opinion, Edinburgh were right to do it differently last year because the advice could have been interpreted in that way. But this is not a question of blaming someone. What we're trying to get to is the truth. And the fact is that things are done differently this year than they were last year. And it was, in fact, due to a small residence group getting together and actually saying, well, we think the impacts that we're measuring on a day-to-day basis are worse than the ones you say.
For those listening, Professor Laxon is a government-appointed air quality expert.
Yes.
What did you make of the point that he made that his measurements have a margin of error of up to 10%?
Well, the figures quoted here were an annual average limit of 40, a corrected measurement of 36.5 with a 10% error. So that you draw your own conclusions. It's certainly not impossible from that measurement that the air quality limits are being exceeded, but that's not just what we're saying. The argument's much more complex than that. Even if that figure is unimpeachable, the important thing is that if you take houses in close proximity, you don't just get the noise. You get, in the canyon, the chimney effect, which means that you are tending or possibly going to draw pollutants into the building far more effectively in this kind of environment, because the windows are all leaky and the bricks are all leaky, if you like, the stonework.
Can you explain that to those of us who don't live in the New Town or have nice houses that are listed? What's the problem
no,
there?
No, that the if you look at any of the buildings here, any of the sort of the older Georgian buildings, they don't actually have damp-proof courses. Now, if you look closely, you'll see areas where there are grills on the bottom. Now, those grills are needed to keep the timbers dry, otherwise you get rising damp, so you have to draw air into the building to actually keep them safe, to keep them, you know, habitable. So air's always been an important part of making this type of architecture work, and it's not just... It's any property without a damp-proof course. So any old property is going to have a similar sort of issue. And, of course, if old properties have windows that aren't terribly well sealed, then they're going to get drawn through the window as well. Of course, in the particular case where most of Edinburgh is listed, you're not allowed to change the windows anyway. So you couldn't put double glazing in, you couldn't put UVPC windows in, you couldn't put a damp-proof course in and seal up your air bricks. These are buildings that are temporarily occupied and then handed on. And we like Edinburgh. Edinburgh's a nice place to live. I'm quite happy with the housing stock. What I'm concerned about is that these more subtle questions simply haven't been considered in the debate today. And as you heard, these were the things I was trying to put on the table that actually weren't terribly well terribly well considered.
I sensed some frustration about the format of the meeting. Were you told it would be a bit different?
We were told at the original meeting that the tram subcommittee would allow us to put our technical arguments into a committee and have discussions with experts. The requirement to do 2.5 years' work in 10 minutes, I think, is problematic. I don't think that those arguments were given appropriate consideration. You can see here that it's not actually a room where people can even see what you're showing terribly well, because the monitors are all underneath the tables. So this was not a place where we could have had those debates, I think, in detail. So people made their presentations beforehand and not in response to the arguments. So Dr. Othieno's presentation and Professor Laxon's presentation were both pre-prepared according to their understanding of the issues. And that made them somewhat general, and it meant that they couldn't really respond to specific questions.
Okay, and just for the record, for anyone who's listening that might think your group is anti-tram, what's your stance on that?
No, we've never been anti-tram. Edinburgh is a place that has, you know, a great future if it can work out its infrastructure. What seems crazy to us is that you should reserve the traditional highways through Edinburgh for a tram that runs occasionally and not 24 hours. The idea is actually to get all that traffic off and into areas that are largely residential. So the original impact report for the whole of the tram system as it was envisaged in 2003 said that 134,500 households would get worse air quality as a result. If you consider that dispersal all the way through Edinburgh, and perhaps add something like the current plans to make that a 20-mile-an-hour speed limit as well, then you've got large dispersal from commercial routes into residential routes, and that'll be going through 24/7. So big lorries going through, delivering to shops well before they open, will no longer be carried on the commercial streets that those shops are located on, but perversely carried on streets that people are trying to sleep in. And that doesn't seem to be sensible. So it's nothing to do with the tram. This is purely an implementation of a traffic regulation order, which has cleared everything that tram might want to use of largely other forms of transport. And I think that that's a very short-sighted view of the future of Edinburgh, because if it damages the environment and it makes Edinburgh a net polluter, then it's going to be a less attractive place to live, work and compete.